Welcome to CBS Sports Basketball Podcast, emergency podcast, as almost every site is doing because of a massive trade that has gone down on Tuesday, August 22nd. The Boston Celtics send Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Ante Zizic, and the vaunted, cherished 2018 Brooklyn Nets first-round pick to the Cleveland Cavaliers for Kyrie Irving. It's a stunner of a deal. Brad Botkin, NBA writer for CBS Sports, joins me to talk about this extremely weird trade. It's just weird. For the most part, if you're not in the Boston area and therefore are not just swallowing whatever the Celtics tell you, the widespread reaction has been that the Cavaliers won this deal and won it pretty handily. The Celtics didn't necessarily lose this deal, but when you look at the Cavs managed to pull a rabbit out of a hat, which is what I'm writing kind of right now in Winners and Losers, is that, you know, they had Kyrie gave them this trade demand, so they have compromised leverage. They have a limited timeline to work with it. They have to satisfy short-term needs with trying to compete right now because you still have LeBron. And if you win the title this year by some stretch of miracle, then he stays and you secure yourself for another 5 years. And if you don't compete this year, then he's definitely gone. That hurts you even more. But because he could go in 2018, you also needed to try and look at your long-term prospects, which is why so many young pieces were talked about in potential trades, whether it was Devin Booker or Jamal Murray or Kristaps Porzingis. And so what winds up happening is the Celtics give them Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder, who help them right now. Thomas and Irving right now, if Thomas is healthy, which is a big question, are basically a wash if you look at their production. And then the 2018 Nets pick gives you this long-term piece that you can either use to try and help build around LeBron with either drafting or trading it. Or if he leaves, it's insurance, and you can say, okay, LeBron's gone. We have the 2018 Nets pick. We're going to rebuild right now. We're going to deal off J.R. Smith and Kevin Love and everybody else and rebuild from here, and you have a plan going forward. So they've covered both of their bases. For me, that's why I wrote tonight, like, this is why all of these different options came out well. No matter what goes down with LeBron or this season, they've done the most that they could with what they had to work with.
Absolutely. They could not have asked for a better deal. It's crazy that they got this deal from the Celtics, who are notorious for fleecing other teams. I wouldn't call this a fleecing on either side. I think this is a win-win trade, which is, you know, one of those rare deals in the NBA. But Cleveland was up against it. You know, they couldn't do anything this summer. No cap room, no picks to trade until, what, I think 2021. They're trying, like you said, they have to set up the future around the fact that LeBron isn't going to be there. And then if he stays, great. But they're planning for LeBron not being there. Gilbert said as much. And they're trying to get a guy, like you said, they're trying to get Jackson. Can't get him. Why? Because all these teams value player control so much. It's difficult to make a trade for a guy like Kyrie Irving. We saw it earlier in the summer with Jimmy Butler. Guys that are mid-contract with no guarantee that they're going to re-sign long-term, you don't want to give up a promising young rookie player like a Josh Jackson or a Jason Tatum on a rookie scale that you have control over for the next 4 years and probably after that. You just aren't going to give it up for a guy, certainly if you're not in the contention to win in the near term. So the Cavs were really up against it. And then the one team that you think you're not going to get a favorable deal from all of a sudden pulls a trigger on the thing, on the pieces that they were, that they nearly refused to move. I mean, it's very interesting. I think you and I would agree that Jimmy Butler is a better player than Kyrie Irving, but obviously they wouldn't move these pieces for him. I would have to think that the Bulls would jump at this package over what they got from Minnesota. So you have to assume, look, they're not moving this for Jimmy Butler. You know, I think this comes down to Isaiah versus Kyrie. We were both on the conference call with Danny Ainge. Danny Ainge basically confirmed as much when he said, Kyrie fits our timeline. The Celtics are not necessarily trying to win right now. They're playing 2, 3, 4 years down the road. When they, if they can re-sign Irving, he's only 25 years old as opposed to Thomas, who's what, 29. If they have to sign him to a max deal next year, he's 33, 34, you know, by the time that deal is at the end of it. And the Celtics are looking to be the best team in the league on the back end of this Warriors run. and or if LeBron leaves Cleveland. So they're not necessarily playing for right now, and that's, I think, really the difference. Irving's 25, Thomas is 29, and they're playing for 3 or 4 years from now, two, 3 years from now. Huge deal for the Cavs because, again, they were up against it, and this is a huge package.
Yeah, they got pretty much everything that you can want. For Boston, I get the idea, like, you know, you're planning for 2-3 years down the road, but that doesn't really make a lot of sense given, all right, if you're planning for 2-3 years down the road, then why did you go out and sign Al Horford and Gordon Hayward? You don't get those guys to win 2-3 years down the road. You go to win now.
Well, Hayward they have for 4 years. Horford's an interesting thing because I've had this discussion with a few people, and I do think Horford has a very outsized contract. I don't think he's a guy that's going to be a centerpiece of a championship team 2-3 years from now. I don't even think he is right now. But a lot of people would argue that Horford was kind of that guy that they had to go get, sort of like a Millsap in Denver, to establish credibility for future moves. And one could argue that maybe that lures Gordon Hayward, and then those two together brings Kyrie Irving into the fold. It's sort of an intangible effect. That would be the only way that I would think Horford is really going to end up being a piece of this.
Yeah, and then it becomes, okay, are you going to deal him when he's over 30 and on a huge contract? And that gets more complicated. Ainge at the end of the press conference or the conference call did indicate, he's like, you know, let's wait till the end of the summer. And they're like, so there are more moves? And he was like, well, you never know, and was like selling it. It's like, look, man, you turn down deals for other guys and you finally pull the trigger. Like, you also don't have that many assets left. Like, you do have the Lakers pick, that's true. But I don't know who else they're going to deal in order to try and pick up somebody. I don't know where that goes. I do keep looking at this from Boston's perspective. Like, I took a step back and was like, all right, let's look at what they had and what they dealt and what they got in. So, like, in is Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum, Marcus Morris. Okay, good. Really good. Great, even. That's two all-stars, really good players. Irving's complicated, but he's definitely one of the best scorers in the league individually. Out. Okay. Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, Markelle Fultz, and the Nets pick.
Well, you can't really say full, if we're talking about in
no,
and out.
No, if you get Tatum.
Or if you don't get Tatum, like, you're saying you can get Fultz.
Yeah. Like if we're going to say Fultz is on the in, you have to say, well, you could have had Fultz, and so Fultz is out. You swapped out.
Yeah, Fultz. Sure.
You know, sure. And you have the Lakers pick.
Sure.
So, I don't know. Like, I don't know which of those is actually – I really don't know which of those is.
Like I said, I think it, you can make a very strong case that it's a wash. Yeah. You really can, with the only difference being Kyrie's 25 against Thomas's 29. I really think that's all this comes down to. You know, you can really argue that everything, like you said, what goes in – what came in, what went out is in a lot of ways a wash. So they got a younger player. They got a younger player, and he, like Ainge said, he fits their timeline. I mean, I really think it a huge, huge deal like this could boil down to that kind of detail.
And on top of it, they don't have to pay Isaiah Thomas $125 million next summer. You know, even if you're going to get him on a 3-year, $100 million deal, that means that you can only go so far. And now you've got a little bit more flexibility around the edges, even though you're pretty cap-strapped. You got a little bit more flexibility to kind of figure out things if you need to before you have to pay Irving the max, and then you're pretty much locked in. I do think that this – I will say that's actually one of the bad sides is like committing long-term to Isaiah Thomas. The good news about this is the Cavs are going to know what their situation is before they have to make the decision on Thomas. So if LeBron says, I'm out, see ya, the Cavs can say – Isaiah, like, we loved having you. Thanks so much for everything. But we're going to be rebuilding. You don't want to be here. Like, you don't want to have any part of this. And we can't commit big money because you're only going to make us so good. And we're going to be pretty bad. And it's going to be a bad situation. And then they can just move forward. They can do what would be a very Cleveland thing to do. And just, LeBron's gone. Oh, well, we're going all in with Isaiah. And that's a mistake. But if they don't do that, they can just clear the books and then start over. Like, you just get to start over. And if LeBron says, you know what? I like this team. We play better. I think that we can. I love being here. I like the vibe. We didn't beat the Warriors, but so what? I'm going to sign. I'm going to stay. And then you're like, okay, we're going to keep Isaiah Thomas. And then you say, Isaiah, we'll give you 3 years, $100 million, which is exactly what Kyle Lowry got. And then if he takes that, great. If he doesn't, then you will still have a lot of options to replace him. Like, if you clear the money, you're not going to have a hard time replacing a point guard on the Cavaliers. If you have the space, that's not going to be an issue. So there's all these ways that the Cavs have kind of maximized things. Now, they can screw things up because it's the Cavs and that's what they do. But it is kind of interesting. I also keep wondering, like, and you, like, immediately mentioned this, like, they've got the Nets pick now. Let's say it's February, and it's the trade deadline. And the Cavs are good, but they're not great, but they're still not, like, they're basically about what they were last year. Like, they're really good. And then things are not working in New Orleans, and DeMarcus Cousins is there, and he's going to be a free agent, and you've got the option there. Or Paul George in OKC, that doesn't work out. And all of a sudden, and the Thunder would be like, well, look, we only gave up Victor Oladipo and Sabonis for him in the first place. So if you give us, you know, if you give us whoever in the Nets pick, we'll take that. And then the Thunder would have just turned Victor Oladipo and Sabonis into the Nets pick, and you would do that deal anyway. Like, there's all these ways that the Cavs will be in a position to say, we can go get another star right now. They could do it at the trade deadline. They could do it at the draft, depending on what LeBron decides. So they've got really all of these options for what they're able to do.
Yeah, I mean, what's really making this so interesting for so many teams is having to make this decision between a star player who you just can't be certain is going to resign, like you just mentioned with George and OKC. If they knew George was going to resign, then they'd just stick with George. But with that doubt that he might not, hell yeah, if you can go get the 2018 Nets pick and another player and bring him in again, that player control. The Cavs would have an interesting decision to make because – unless they, behind closed doors, they get some sort of certain answer from LeBron, whether he's staying or going, which they're probably not going to get. It's going to be a very tough call at the trade deadline to go move that 2018 Nets pick for some team to just take a half a season run at a title with LeBron and then he leaves anyway. You know, it's very, very difficult to make that decision. I think a team with LeBron would err on the side of going for it. And not look, that's what they've done consistently since he's been there. That's why they traded Wiggins for Love. I would say that if a trade for a guy like Cousins was available, yeah, I think that's very, very much on the radar. I think you have to think that. I mean, look at the Cavs. If you, let's just say, you know, let's just use it for argument's sake. Let's say you get Cousins. Okay. You're running out Isaiah, Love, Cousins, and LeBron. I mean, it's not quite the Warriors, but you're running out a ton of star power. You're running out three legit MVP level players. You know, plus Kevin Love. Say this for the NBA. In a league where we thought it was kind of going to get a little bit boring because we sort of know who's going to win. You know, sort of all this through at least one lens feels like a lot of smoke and mirrors. Like, all right, guys, everybody go out and have this crazy summer and make all these blockbuster deals, but the Warriors are still going to win. But you got to be pretty excited for the NBA next year. Yeah. I mean, watching the Celtics play with Kyrie, watching OKC play with George, watching Houston play with Paul, watching what evolves with the Cavs and Isaiah Thomas. All of a sudden, this is what this league needs. In short of eliminating conferences and changing the playoff structure, this is what this league needs. A jolt of energy in different teams that don't necessarily, they might not necessarily win at all, but you now are back all in on watching them with full enthusiasm. Because those teams were gone for that's what the Warriors were doing. This is going to be a fun year.
I mean, opening night. The first game of opening night,
Celtics-Cavs,
is going to be Isaiah Thomas going against the team that traded him after telling him, like, we love you, like, you're our guy, and then they trade him, versus, and on the other hand, like, I will be very intrigued to see what LeBron does. I'll be very intrigued to see, like, is LeBron, he'll wait. I know he won't do it from the get-go because it's not in his DNA, but at some point in that game, he'll be like, I got Kyrie, don't worry, I'll guard Kyrie. And that's going to be, like, there's going to be gasps, audible gasps in the crowd at the queue.
This is just fun. It's just, you know, for those reasons, kind of the sideshow things, and just seeing great players in new uniforms it never fails to generate so much excitement. And there are so many great players in new places this year. This has just been an unbelievable summer. The NBA is, you know, creeping up on the NFL, if you ask me. I mean, this is, the summer's just getting wild. And it might not be over. I mean, with all this LeBron talk, and it's just, it's really something right now. The league is in such a phenomenal place. I think it needed, it really needed this summer. The Warriors were making things pretty stale.
I think it's interesting. I think a lot of us, there's a lot of questions to answer, which will make it for an entertaining season to cover, even if we know the outcome at the end of it. So I think one of the things I have questions about, I'm writing winners and losers right now, I actually kind of think Gordon Hayward's kind of a loser here. And the reason is Isaiah was part of an offense that really did share the ball. He had a high usage. He had a higher usage than Kyrie, but that offense moved. And like an example of that is Kyrie's number of ISOs is astronomical compared to Thomas's. And the response to that is going to be, well, yeah, but he played for Ty Lue and Isaiah played for Brad Stevens. And when now that Kyrie plays for Brad Stevens, it'll be fine. But here's the thing. Most ISOs are a choice. It means that, okay, the play is broken down. You come off of a pick and roll. It didn't work out the way you wanted. There was no easy option. So you make the decision, I've got my guy, I'm just going to go one-on-one. That's how it really works most of the time. And so I really wonder if what the Boston offense is going to look like next year, because Al Horford's a great passer, and they've got a bunch of really good weapons. But there's also more inexperience now in a bunch of key situations. Like Jaylen Brown, because of the loss of Avery Bradley, like he's going to have to play a major role. Marcus Morris is good, but he's very limited in what he can do. And like Jaylen Brown's going to have to play a big role. Jason Tatum's going to have to play a big role. Like, all of these guys are going to, these young guys are going to have to step in and really deliver. And that combined with a new point guard in kind of charge of things, who's been told, like, you're the guy, I think this is really going to be problematic. I think that there's going to be some things that Boston's going to have to work out. I'm not saying Boston's going to be worse. I'm just saying there's going to be stuff I think that they're going to have to figure out as the season goes.
Yeah, they'll have to figure it out. But I think people overrate that part of it. I still kind of come back to, I think, look, there were some people when Durant went to the Warriors that the first question they asked, I think it was the old, there's only one ball. How are they going to figure out who's the man? And these things, more and more in the league, there's almost a celebration of selflessness. It's now the trend of great players to want to play with other great players, to be a part of something bigger than sort of themselves. Nobody wants to go the Carmelo Anthony route, even if it may have seemed that way in the press with Kyrie demanding a trade and word leaking out that he really favored going to the Knicks, and it started to seem like, well, this guy just wants to be the man on the big stage and he doesn't care if they lose. But this is the same guy who said he'd be willing to sign an extension with the Spurs. So obviously, this is that he's up for being a part of a system and not being the man. This is a guy who has been part of a system and has played second fiddle at a championship level for the last 3 years. I don't think it's going to be an ego problem for Kyrie. There will be the normal integration adjustments that any great player that's used to having the ball in his hands has when he goes to a new team. He has to adjust to them. They have to adjust to him. I don't think the ego part of it of I want to be the man, and that conflicts with the Celtics and sort of their more equitable offense. I don't think that's going to be very difficult. I think the same thing about Paul and Harden. I think those guys want to play together. I think on paper it's easy to say they're both high usage guys. But I think they'll figure out how to play together. I think in terms of, you know, who's getting the shots, I think what they have to figure out is the basketball stuff. You know, where are they getting any shots? How are they getting their shots? What are they doing late in the shot clock? They probably don't have to worry about outlet passes. They're probably going to get the board and go whoever can get at their hands the quickest. I think Kyrie's going to fit in fine in Boston. I'm pretty excited about that. You know, I was more excited about Boston than you were just when they got Hayward. I thought that salvaged the summer. I think getting Kyrie, I think he's a better player than Isaiah. The numbers would not back that up, but I think he's a better player than Isaiah. He's certainly more exciting to me. I like the Celtics. I do. I'm not going to measure them against the Warriors and say, oh, now they're a title contender. I just, they're, uh, they're right there in that group of three or four teams underneath the Warriors that I think you could make a case that any one of them could be the second best team. I think the Rockets, the Thunder, the Celtics, and the Cavs. I think you can all make a reasonable case that those four teams are playing for number two.
And hey, if you want to learn more about the Rockets and how they're going to fit in, I have a piece coming later this week, probably Thursday,
that Beautiful. Goes
deep on that. And actually, Mike D'Antoni told me something really great about why those two are going to work together, because I was skeptical, and his quote was really great on it. You can find it in that piece. At the risk of us...
One thing about that, I thought it was really interesting right when that deal first went down that you noted how Chris Paul contradicts what the Rockets do as a whole. Notably, he's a mid-range shooter, a great mid-range shooter. He's a high dribble guy. And you ask the question, are they going to simply make an exception? And I think D'Antoni even said that, Chris Paul's an exception. And you, I think, made a very astute observation that it's one thing to say that. It's another thing to employ that. It's going to be pretty tough if the whole team's operating under one guideline and then one player's operating under another.
Yep.
So I think that's what's going to be very interesting is how Paul can bleed into the rest of the team and the rest of the team can bleed into Paul.
I'm actually more confident that he's going to adapt rather than the Rockets are going to. I'm way more into that idea after talking to D'Antoni.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Do you think that that's the right move? Okay, yes. I think we're in agreement that he can adapt, but is Paul stopping shooting those mid-range shots?
Yes.
Or at least lowering them, you think that's the right play?
Absolutely, 100%. And the reason is it's not a metrics thing. It's this, is that like I actually, because I've been doing so much research for this piece, a couple of areas where Paul struggled were these specific points. These were the specific points where he tended to struggle in terms of he was great at transition threes. He struggled on what are called Pujits, which are pull-up jumpers in transition from two-point range. He really struggled on those. That was where his transition offense fell back a little bit. He was only 61st percentile in that versus all of the rest of them, which were so good. That's where he struggled. He was great, 44% on three-pointers in those kind of situations. His pick-and-roll offense, he was still really great in that, but look, when he takes a runner coming off of the pick-and-roll, he's 97th percentile. When he gets to the basket, he's 82nd percentile. When he takes a dribble jumper, he's 77th percentile. He's still great, but not as effective, and he's going to have better options that are always moving and better guys that are perimeter shooters for him to kick to. He's going to have better options, and I think Chris Paul will always make that decision. Will he still take some mid-range jumpers? For sure. I looked it up today. He took 5.3 mid-range jumpers per game. The Rockets as a team took 7.3 last year.
Right.
Like, it is incredible how much that is different. But I do believe that he'll make those adjustments, and he's just like the big thing that people miss on it is like the mid range is a good shot. It's not about whether the mid range is a good shot or not. It's about do you have better options? If you don't have better options, if you have a big that can't finish and you have shooters that can't shoot, the mid range is going to be a better option. Like that's been the case in with the Clippers a lot. Is if you don't have the lob to Jordan or Griffin, and your options are a Blake Griffin spot up, two pointer, or an Austin Rivers spot up three. Then yeah, that mid-range two is a really good look. But if you have Ryan Anderson or Eric Gordon on the perimeter, or James Harden, or you have Clint Capella at the rim who's able to leap up and finish, or Nene who's really great on the pick-and-roll finishing off of the run, you're always going to have better options. So I think that that's part of what we'll kind of see. At the risk of devolving into our conversation about space and the impact of shooting, etc., what to you makes, and it's a completely valid opinion, but I'm curious for what you're thinking is on it. What makes Kyrie Irving a great player in the NBA?
Well, I think he's probably right there with Curry, and Durant as probably the best pure scorer in the league. I guess that can be kind of a vague description. You hear it a lot, but I mean, the guy can just get any bucket he wants. And I think that's what makes him great. I think it's fairly obvious. That's what makes him great. And I think he's going to be even better. He still had a high usage rate in Cleveland. It's sort of a misnomer that he was playing second fiddle to LeBron. He's still operating in that offense to a large degree as he would as the clear number one on another team. I think it's more of a mindset thing. You know, he's going to feel like this is my team. And I think that goes a long way. I think that those types of things, when you have players as good as Kyrie Irving, it's little things like that, mental steps that can take your game to the next level. I think he's going to feel a freedom that he hasn't felt playing next to LeBron. I don't think it's going to be quite as dramatic as, say, when Curry got the reins from Monta Ellis. But getting your own team, getting a new thing where you kind of recharge yourself, restart your career, I think we're going to see a great Kyrie Irving. I think he is so phenomenal with the ball that to just look at some of his playmaking numbers and then say, well, he's not much of a playmaker, I think we all know what Kyrie Irving can do with the ball in his hands. And I think you're going to see a lot of that. I don't think it's much of a stretch to say that he's going to be pretty special next year.
Makes a lot of shots. He sure does shoot a lot. My thing is, I don't know if he makes your team better. I said this on Twitter.
He makes your team better. Come on.
I think the Twitter thing is that...
Well, you don't know if Thomas makes your team better. You're not convinced Thomas makes your team better either. So, you know,
well,
according to...
No,
according to
I would say, of, actually, I actually do believe that. My question was always, does Thomas make your team better in enough ways to counteract how he makes your team worse? That's the gap. And with Kyrie, it's a little bit different, where...
Well, that's the only question you're asking with anyone. I mean, if somebody makes their team better, then that means what they do well outweighs what they don't do well. So that's the equation for any player.
I mean, we're both talking about offensive guys, right? But you've got to be able to lift up your teammates as well. So, like, the thing with Kyrie is he scores so much, it makes your team better because he scores so much. And with Irving and with Thomas, it's legitimately like, well, he's able to create chaos that opens up opportunities for other people. The assist numbers are actually considerably close. It's like 8.6 to 8.3 in assists per 100 possessions. Their actual assist numbers are very, very close. So there's a capacity there, and there's been this feeling, and this started when we started talking about the Kyrie trade, that Kyrie's capable of doing so much more from a playmaking standpoint. And if he does that, he's going to be awesome. And if he embraces the idea of running more pick and roll, he's going to be great. And if he embraces the idea of doing handoffs with Al Horford on the perimeter, he's going to get so many great looks, and he's going to knock down so many shots, and he could have a James Harden when he went to the Rockets type season.
Yes, absolutely. Like, and the question is, why would there be a question of whether he'd be willing to do those things?
Because that's never been who he is. He is a stubborn, one mindset kind of individual. Bear in mind, you're talking about a guy that continues to assert that the earth is flat. So, like, pretty clear. He's got his mind made up on some matters and isn't going to be swayed. And this has been a thing with him where, so people say those Cavs teams were bad before LeBron get there. You can't blame Kyrie for that. He was young and those teams were bad. The difference is that we've seen other point guards in those situations do more to help their team succeed. Like,
yeah, no, there's a legit argument. Yeah. I mean, I think I want to say the Ringer was doing a podcast a while back, and they were discussing John Wall and Kyrie Irving, and a really great point that was made on there. I can't remember who made it, but a great point that was made was that look at all the players that are getting these big deals on the Wizards, like an Otto Porter, a Beal that you could argue are pretty direct beneficiaries of playing next to John Wall. Who has Kyrie Irving made that much better? Who has he made that kind of money? I don't think there's a lot of evidence that he lifts the players around him, but I'll say that while his usage rate is up and he still gets plenty of time with the ball in his hands playing next to LeBron, the situations that he gets the ball in are different. I'm not staring at the film right now, but when you're playing next to a great player who dominates the ball in a lot of situations the way LeBron does, you get the ball late in the shot clock. You get it in different spots on the floor. You're not always bringing it up and getting right into a pick and roll. So while you might have the ball for roughly the same amount of time there in different situations with different times in the shot clock on different places on the floor, and I think that's where you're going to see a big difference in Kyrie, is he's going to be more able to decide when he has the ball and where he has the ball. Whereas I think there were a lot of times in Cleveland, and again, I'm not staring at the film to prove this, but I think it's pretty self-explanatory when you're playing next to a guy like LeBron that sometimes you end up with the ball where you end up with it.
Well, that was actually the biggest issue was, like, they would try and run action with LeBron and Love or whoever else, and then Kyrie would slip open, and so Kyrie would get the ball. And then late in the shot clock, Kyrie would have two options. He would drive and draw help, and he would have a wide open guy spotting up ready to knock down a shot. And instead, he'd go 1-on-3, and he would challenge them. And the difference is, a lot of the time, he would make that tough-ass shot where you'd be like, just an incredible finish from Kyrie Irving. And that excused the rest of the time when he didn't make those shots, because via Synergy Sports, around the basket, he was 69th percentile, which is really good, but it's also not elite. And he gets worse when you talk about his runner. He was 40th percentile on runners. And that's actually, I'm going to do a piece on this later in the summer. That's a really important shot to be able to hit right now because of how teams are loading up on guarding the perimeter and at the paint. That mid-range is open, and the mid-range jumper is not a valuable shot, but the runner is really valuable because it's like a layup, only from a little bit of wider distance, and he's bad at those. So, like, there's these opportunities there where, like, he is not, like, he takes less efficient, he opts for the less efficient situation, and I know that we get caught too much up on efficiency, and I get that, but the problem is, it's like, it was okay when it was with LeBron, because LeBron did everything else, so it was like, Kyrie was like this nice, he was the garnish on the plate. He was the mayonnaise. He was the condiments on the sandwich. Like, the sandwich was good, but man, you put that nice mustard on there, okay, that's a great sandwich. But, like, he was never the meat, and he was never the bread. He was just the condiment. That's all that Kyrie Irving has been. And
yeah,
now,
I think you're underplaying a little bit. I mean, it's pretty obviously he was never the main guy, but LeBron does not win that title in 2016 without Kyrie any more than Kyrie wins it without LeBron.
No,
so.
I agree to that degree. They needed a scorer, and he played that role for them. But it is a problem when that's all you are. When that's all
listen, we can have – it's kind of two different conversations here. I mean, we can get into the weaknesses that a guy like Kyrie brings or a guy like Isaiah. Bottom line, right now, we're in the wake of a huge trade. Are you more excited about the Celtics right now than you were before this trade? I mean, my answer is absolutely yes.
No.
I am. I am. And I admit that they're kind of equal players right now, but I have to – the excitement factor, the youth factor, the new face and a new place factor – all of that just it again, sometimes you get hyped up on teams for reasons like this. Like, I would be pumped if Carmelo Anthony went to the Rockets, and you would say, you know what? I don't think it makes him that much better. You're looking at it through a very analytical lens. I'm looking at it like, you know what? This team just got really exciting. I'm pretty happy for the Celtics in this trade.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the thing, though, is I think you are underrating Isaiah a little bit, which is very odd for me to say because I've dogged the guy constantly.
No, I think Isaiah's great. I just think Kyrie's better. I'd rather have Kyrie.
Yeah, you could say you'd rather have Kyrie, but you can't really say it's like there's not leagues here. Like, it's pretty close. Like, they're just about the same dude. Like, neither one of them can defend. They both get hung up and die on screens. They both make insane finishes at the rim. They both can hit wild, crazy shots. They're both clutches all get out. They're both, like, able to electrify when they get going. Like, when those guys get hot, they are some of the most fun guys in the league to watch score because that's what they can do, right? Like, they are about equal. So if you ask about the excitement factor, I'm like, I'm excited to watch the Celtics because of, like, Gordon Hayward. But even then, like, I would feel more comfortable with, like, with more consistency, a more complete kind of roster because, like, that's what's kind of weird about this deal, right, is they gave up the Nets pick, so they kind of sacrificed the future, but they also made a lot of uncertainty. Like, you can't be as certain about this team being good. You can say, I think they could be better, and I'd say, okay, but there's a wider variance range now for this team because they broke up so much continuity.
I don't think so. They might end up being the same, you know, roughly the same team, in which case it's tough to justify getting rid of that 2018 pick, but they're not going to get worse.
You know that if you bring back Isaiah, you know what you're getting. Like, if you brought back
You know what you're getting with Kyrie, too.
Well, no, but that's the thing, though, is you don't know what you're getting because you don't know how he's going to do there. You do not know.
Oh, yeah, you do.
You could say, I feel very confident he's going to succeed, but you cannot be sure.
Sure, I can. What do you think the worst that Kyrie's going to do in Boston?
He's going to dominate. He's going to be a ball hog. He's going to iso a lot, and the rest of the team's going to get pissed.
Okay, so what? You think Celtics are going to win 44 games in the East next year?
What if they win 48?
They're not. They're going over 50. What do you want to bet right now? They're going over 50. They're gonna be at worst the same number of wins they were last year.
It'll be interesting. I think it'll be interesting to see. And I'm not saying it can't happen. My argument is that there's a wider variance. That there's a wider possibility of what can happen.
See, I just don't understand that because when you're watching the Celtics last year, you were the king of saying that they're sort of benefiting from the East. They're a bunch of tryhards.
Yep.
You know, you didn't think that their number of wins was indicative of how good you thought they were closer to a 48-win team last year. And now you're saying that you know what you got with Isaiah. You have this stable thing with the Celtics. You're going to win this many games, no doubt. Like if 2 months ago when we talked about the Celtics, you would have said even with Isaiah they were probably going down 5 wins.
I would have said five. I would have said there's a good chance that they do worse. I think that's definitely true. And I think that by something that number could wind up being higher than what they finished with Kyrie Irving. That doesn't mean that it won't. There's a lot of ways I could see this working. Like if Kyrie gets there and is like. And he says, I want to be the man, and I understand that means I got to be coachable. Like, we got to make the most of what we have, and I have to lead. If he gets all of that, which he has shown zero indication of ever being that guy, but if he is that guy, then they're going to win. They can win 57 games, and they can be a serious force. And they can't challenge the Warriors, but who cares? They could be the second best team in the league. Like, that's entirely possible.
So why not take it? So why wouldn't you take a team that, I mean, pretty roughly, they're going to be at least as good as last year.
I mean, you also tend to look at only the top, and you're missing that on the middle part. I'm like, look, Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder are really good, and they're gone.
I'm with you on that, and I hated the Avery Bradley deal when they did it. I kind of thought that they were ultimately going to not give Thomas a max, and so I was, if you're gonna get rid of Bradley. Why not package him up? And, you know, that was when I wanted them to get Butler. When I was like, you know, why not? Why just go out and let Avery Bradley be a cap casualty? I don't like that at all. You know, and I don't think Irving totally makes up for some of those moves. I'm all in on Avery Bradley, and Crowder. But as a whole, look, forget the picks and everything. Just next year, Gordon Hayward, Kyrie Irving and Marcus Morris versus Avery Bradley, okay, Crowder and Isaiah Thomas. I take the three that they brought in. Irving, Hayward, and Tatum and Marcus Morris.
Yeah, I mean, if you're ranking them, sure. I just, like, you know, I don't think of teams like that. I don't think of teams in terms of, and like, I mean, El Hassan was making this point on Twitter too about like teams are constructed around fit and design, not about ranking players and then getting the best ones you can. That's not how teams are created.
No, I understand that. But again, I just think that I don't see how they've become a markedly different team. I think their defense has suffered. Crowder's a good
team. I think it's going to be, look, they were wildly different 2 years ago. They've been a different team under Stevens every single year. And that's what's kind of fascinating about him. If they feel like they've got the right combination, then they're going to be awesome. Like, they're going to be just righteous. Injuries are obviously a big deal because they've been really fortunate in that regard. They missed Bradley and Crowder missed time last year, but overall they've been pretty. They haven't gotten hit with any sort of like massive of devastating losses.
Yeah, the Celtics to me just never felt like a team that you had to take seriously. I was in the same camp as you. Like, they're fun. They're fun to watch. They're fun to root for. And they, to me, I still don't think they're championship contenders, but they feel more today. They feel more like a team that's moving toward elite to me. And that might be just total perception of Kyrie. I mean, you know how I feel about new and fresh. That's why I want the East and the West to have to combine in the playoffs so that I can see new matchups. Yeah. And now I'm seeing a new player on a new team. And it's just, I just think it's so good for the league. It's exciting. I don't think necessarily a while back you said that, you know, you find Thomas really exciting. Well, so do I. I think Thomas individually is probably just as exciting as Irving. I think when he gets going, there's probably not a more exciting guy in the league, maybe short of Steph Curry when he gets going. I think, but now the Celtics as a team are more exciting because they're new. There's something new. You know what they are. Like you said, you know what they are with Thomas. They're a 50-win team.
And
in the East, you know what they are. At least you don't know what they are with Irving. There's intrigue.
And likewise, I think, you know, with the Cavs, there's a number of ways this goes badly, right? So if that hip injury winds up being serious, and hip injuries are a real concern, if that winds up being a problem and Thomas is never the same, and then the Nets finish sixth in the lottery. I mean, that's a catastrophe of biblical proportions for the Cavaliers. Like, that is an unholy nightmare if that's what happens. So there's all these ways that the trade could go badly for Cleveland.
It sort of is, but I'll tell you what. If you look at the hauls that other star players are getting, if you look at what Butler attracted, if you look at what DeMarcus Cousins attracted, it's not even close to what Kyrie got. If you took Isaiah out of this deal, even if his hip goes bad and they got to send him off next year to go sign a contract with some other team.
Crowder, Zizic, and the Nets pick?
Simply Crowder and the pick.
Yeah.
Just Crowder and the pick. And this is still a better deal than the Pacers got for George, better deal than the Kings got for Cousins, better deal than the Bulls got for Butler. This is a huge haul.
Yeah.
I mean, I think right now they're playing for LeBron's out of here, and they still got a pretty damn good team. If Isaiah leaves and they get nothing out of him, they got a great future. I mean, I can't overstate how great of a deal this is for the Cavs. Like I said, if they would have got Crowder, just Crowder in the pick.
Which goes back to what you said earlier, and this is why I don't understand it, is, okay, instead of doing the wash of, like, you think, like, well, I think Kyrie Irving's better than Isaiah Thomas. Okay, but you're talking about micro degrees. Here's an idea. Package the 2018 Nets pick and go back to the Pacers and say, before you do a deal, please call us. Before you agree to anything.
I'm with you. Look, they were obvious. That's my biggest question. They were obviously willing to move that pick for the right guy. It's very interesting to me that they think Kyrie's the right guy and not Butler. Again, I think it's because he plays the position that Isaiah wins. I don't think they believe they can win a championship with Isaiah at point guard. It's been proven you can win a championship, albeit next to LeBron, with Kyrie at the point guard, and he's only 25 years old. I think it comes down to which one of those guys do you want running your team. But I think in a vacuum, I would say a lot of people, if not most people, would say Butler's a better player than Kyrie. So it's very interesting that the Celtics wouldn't move that 2018 pick and Crowder or Bradley when they still had him, whatever they had to package to get a guy like Butler. I can understand George because he's probably a one-year rental. But Butler's got the same amount of time left on his contract that Irving does. I think this is an excitement deal. I think there's a little higher ceiling in the future for the Celtics with Kyrie. But no, I don't feel like he's so much different than Isaiah that it's going to hugely compensate for the loss of Crowder and that pick. I like Kyrie. I love guys who can put the ball in the basket, no matter how they do. I love them. I don't think you can replace them. I will never think anything's more important. And Kyrie can do that. As good, if not better, than anyone in the world. But it's really interesting to me. Like, that's what I said at the top of this podcast. It's interesting that the Celtics were the team that gave the Cavs this deal, because the Suns aren't parting with Jackson. Knicks aren't parting with Porzingis. None of these teams want to get rid of these, you know, people were making runs at Lonzo Ball early when you weren't sure what the Lakers were going to do with the two pick. I doubt the Celtics were willing to trade this pick next year for Irving, but not Butler. I'm with you. I think they could have gotten more creative when Bradley was still on the roster, when Crowder was still on the roster, and they were willing to move that pick. I think they could have done more than this. But you have to remember, it wasn't that long ago that they missed out on Butler and Hayward was still a free agent. This summer could have ended up with no Hayward. Okay. Bradley 1 year away from a max deal, and Thomas 1 year away from a max deal. No change to your team at all. And not that long after that, they brought in Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving. Now, we all knew, look, again, you put Irving and Thomas right alongside each other, and it's fair to say that they're pretty equal players. If Thomas isn't a little better, to be honest. But them getting Irving and packaging all this together, they are an absolutely different team with Hayward and Irving, the team as a whole. And it's a big summer. I really think I don't think there's any way to argue that.
Absolutely. All right, that's going to wrap it up. Emergency podcast. Brad Bakken, you can find him on Twitter @BradBakkenCBS. I'm on Twitter @HBBasketball. Brad, thanks for joining.
Okay.